The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
Ukraine has estimated that the Russians have lost about 65,000 personnel in the war against their country. They use the term liquidated. The Russians, on the other hand, are maintaining that a fraction of that, maybe just 10%, less than 6,000 people, have been killed since the start of the war. So what is the true number, given that the truth is a casualty always in the fog of war? Well, to answer that question, we're joined by Joshua Keating, Global Security Reporter at Grid News. Joshua, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We'll start off with the latest news from Ukraine, of course, and that is the attacks by what they are calling kamikaze drones on Kyiv itself.
Yeah, so I mean, we saw these heavy bombardment of Ukrainian cities and energy infrastructure last week. That was in retaliation, Russians said, for the destruction or the attack on a bridge linking Crimea with Russia. This, you know, some early indications say that there are signs saying that this was in retaliation for alleged Ukrainian attacks on Belgorod, a city within Russia, which apparently the Ukrainians have now been striking. So, you know, it's just a signal that that they're going to respond to any of these attacks on what they consider Russian territory, in this case, what is Russian territory, with heavy attacks targeting Ukrainian civilian infrastructure.
Even though Vladimir Putin indicated that the bombardment of Ukraine was over for the moment, this was in a speech before the weekend.
Right. I don't think we should take any of those statements at face value. I mean, I think that they're clearly going to respond to, you know, any of what they see as provocations with more attacks on civilian targets and, you know, the infrastructure that keeps Ukraine running, essentially.
Now, this is where we get to the estimates of those who are injured or killed in the conflict. Each side will, of course, try to maximize the losses of the other. So how can we know how many troops that Russia has lost, either through death or injury?
I mean, the simple answer is we can't. You know, all these numbers I would take with a huge grain of salt, both especially the ones coming from Russia, but the ones coming from Ukraine as well. You know, NATO and the U.S. government had their own estimates. They haven't put them out since last August or so, when the Pentagon said there were around 70 to 80,000 total casualties, and you can assume about a quarter of those were killed. But you know, those numbers are kind of guesstimates as well. I mean, I think the reason that we can assume that Russia is taking heavy losses was when you saw last month President Putin announce a mass mobilization. He announced a call for up to 300,000 Russian men to be drafted to fight in Ukraine. And that was a step he had been very, very reluctant to take. He had avoided it for a long time, refusing even to call this a war, calling it a special military operation. So I think you can judge by that reversal that Russia is feeling the strain, and that you know, keeping its forces at the front line staffed is a major problem for them, whatever the exact numbers are.
Now, they obviously had to admit a certain level of casualties because the body bags will be arriving back, funerals will be taking place, so families will be talking to each other. They can't dismiss it and say the special military operation has just a couple of hundred casualties. When you get up to admitting around 6,000 fatalities, it's almost impossible to you know, check the cross-fertilization of that information. People acknowledge, you know, a significant number have died, but literally how many is in Russia is probably anybody's guess but the military themselves.
Well, in fact, it's a state secret, and you can be jailed for just revealing the number of casualties, unless you are the military yourself. I mean, you have to remember, Vladimir Putin came to power amid Russia's two very bloody wars in Chechnya during the 90s, when, you know, these bodies of young Russian conscripts coming home in coffins, provoked major protests and was a source of major backlash against the government. And, you know, this was the sort of context of his political rise. So he understands this is a very sensitive issue and something he wants to avoid. And I think you see that, you know, in the use of military contractors. There's this company, the Wagner Group, a private military contractor, which has its own forces. You know, those are not reported. When Wagner fighters die, those are not reported in any of these official statistics. And, you know, we've seen them even recruiting in prisons. They're going into Russian prisons and, you know, offering people their release in exchange for fighting in Ukraine. And, you know, there's also this sort of like patchwork of Russian forces fighting on the front lines. There's regular missionary, there's these Wagner Group mercenaries I mentioned. There's also these sort of local separatist groups from, you know, Donetsk and Luhansk, the two Russian-backed regions in eastern Ukraine. So you have this kind of patchwork of forces. It's not all Russian military, and it's not always clear when you see these numbers, you know, who exactly they're counting, if this is just military or all these other groups. And I think those are all ways for the Russian government to kind of obfuscate and, you know, deny the true human toll in the number of young men who really are losing their lives as a result of this war.
Now, it's interesting that the Russian defense minister has maintained that, you know, the Ukrainian army at the beginning amounted to 201,000 or thereabouts, and they've suffered losses of around 100,000. In other words, half their armed forces have been either killed or wounded, over 61,000 killed, over 49,000 wounded, and yet they're making advances. It doesn't add up.
Yeah, again, I wouldn't take, you know, those numbers coming out of the Kremlin seriously. It is clear the Ukrainians have taken very, very heavy losses and that those numbers are not as well publicized either by the Ukrainian government or by its backers in the West. I don't think there's much, you know, incentive for anyone, you know, supporting Ukraine in this war to publicize that number. You know, I don't think Ukraine has the same issues with manpower that the Russian side has. This is, you know, we've seen that there have been, you know, quite a few, when you talk to Ukrainian officials, they'll say that they still haven't even, you know, there's still people waiting to get into uniform on the Ukraine side. They have basically, you know, a large percentage of their population staying and willing to fight. This is a, for them, this is, you know, defending their own country rather than, you know, being sent into someone else's country. So the dynamics are a little different on the Ukrainian side and the politics of it a little different on the Ukrainian side. But, you know, we can assume that the losses the Ukrainian side has been taking have been very, very heavy as well.
Now, the information dated last Friday from Ukraine suggests 64,300 liquidated personnel from Russia, 2,500 tanks, 5,000 armored personnel carriers, various artillery systems, anti-aircraft warfare systems eliminated. There are so many claims they make. There's no doubt, though, that the Russians have lost a huge amount of hardware, as well as people.
They have lost quite a bit of hardware, and a lot of that hardware has been recovered by the Ukrainians. I mean, it's for all the systems that they're receiving from the West. You know, I think another source of armor for the Ukrainian side has been what they've been capturing on the battlefield as well. I mean, I think the dynamic early in this war was that the Ukrainians may have had the advantage in manpower just because of the populations involved, but the Russians clearly had the advantage in firepower, both, you know, the sort of advanced systems they could bring to the front and the amount of actual ammunition, the amount of shells and bullets they could fire. I think now that gap has narrowed a little bit, you know, because of the aid Ukrainians have been receiving from the West, and because, you know, we've seen signs of strain equipment-wise on the Russian side as well. You know, we've seen reports of them buying ammunition from North Korea, for instance. You know, this drone attack you mentioned at the top of the segment, you know, those were drones supplied by Iran. So they're clearly going to, you know, the few allies that are willing to supply them and getting these materials. So I think that, you know, clearly the Russians still have quite a bit of firepower they can bring to bear, but maybe the advantage in terms of equipment is not quite what it was 6 or 7 months ago.
Now, it's a question I will ask. I'm not sure you will have the answer, and that is about the armaments industry within Russia itself. Obviously, things like cruise missiles require sophisticated guidance systems with chip technology and so on. To what extent is that a vibrant manufacturing industry, and whether or not it can keep pace with the appetite at the front line?
Yeah, it's difficult to answer. I mean, it does appear that they've depleted their stocks of, you know, precision-guided munitions, and also that these export controls that the U.S. and the European countries have placed on Russia to try to limit the number of sort of advanced chips they can import are having an impact on their ability to produce these systems as well. But, you know, I think it's also important we remember when we talk about equipment that, you know, in the schemes of the kind of big industrial heavy warfare that we saw that was more common, you know, decades ago, you know, this war is still relatively new, and it is possible Russia could, you know, in the months to come, ramp up its production of these materials. In the short run, there's some strain. They're, you know, looking to whatever sources they can find to replenish their losses. But, you know, clearly the Russian government has made this a priority. They've passed laws allowing companies in the defense sector to, you know, put workers on extra shifts and, you know, work longer hours. So people talk about this as a war of attrition in terms of manpower, but it's a war of attrition as far as equipment goes as well. And I don't think we've entered the last phase of that conflict yet. And, you know, there's issues on the Ukrainian side as well. I mean, we've seen some worries in the United States that, you know, systems like Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, that the U.S. stocks of those are getting depleted to the point that makes American military planners a little nervous. Most European militaries don't carry the same number of stocks, so you know there's a lot of this stuff in warehouses that can be shipped to Ukraine, but the supplies are not limited, are not limitless, yeah. And we're just not used in the modern era to seeing this kind of warfare, this kind of, you know, almost World War One, World War Two style war of attrition. This isn't the kind of a war that most Western militaries have been preparing to fight.
Joshua Keating, Global Security Reporter at Grid News, thank you very much for joining us. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.